if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 191. It's our first tips podcast of 2022, featuring the Century Tournament of Champions from Kapalua in Hawaii. Paul Williams and Barry O'Hanrahan join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's golf betting action. Happy New Year to you, gents.
Morning, guys. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, guys. Or Lisa quiet Scott. New Year.
Yeah. What was that, sorry?
Quiet New Year, maybe.
Quiet New Year, yeah.
For many, yes, absolutely. Please subscribe to this podcast as you drive the popularity of the show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous golf betting system website with our in-depth betting previews, masses of tournament statistics. We could talk about that in a minute, Paul. And our predictor models, all available completely free of charge. And there is no paywall. We're available on Twitter. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. I've actually put a Century Tournament of Champions video together for YouTube as of Monday. So that's out there in the ether. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast. I love this bit. So we need your five-star reviews. I have to say, we've got plenty here. As ever, for those of you who leave a review on Apple or iTunes, if you know it that way, I will read them out at the start of a future show, leave your name and where you are in the review. Here's one. A requirement for all golf bettors. Five stars. I wouldn't be able to make my betting card without their data. And commentary, the cheeky banter doesn't hurt either. And that is from E or Better, and he is in the US of A. I've also got a second one here. It's titled Price Proud, five stars. Barry, this one's for you, Barry. Barry, there is no price proud. Only good prices and bad prices. Good show, guys. Enjoy the crack. That's from McCrake. And McCrake is in Great Britain. Thank you for those two five-star reviews. Keep them coming.
Lovely stuff.
Cheers, folks.
Cheeky banter. It's a good job they don't record what we say before we go on air, boys, isn't it, really? Otherwise, it might be classed as something slightly different. But, lovely. Thanks for the reviews, chaps. Very much appreciated.
There's an idea, Paul. That's the paywall content. Yeah. The pre-show. Yeah, the non-recorded stuff. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, not the kind of stuff that your granny would want to hear you talking about.
Now, we were going to do a Christmas show, but that all came crashing down when Paul and I went for our Christmas drinks up in London. And within a few days, I had tested positive for COVID. So that kind of took the wind out of the sails in terms of this podcast. Yes, so we basically just had a 5-week period, didn't we, of no podcast, no chit-chat between the three of us, really. But in a way, I feel more refreshed for it, and I'm raring to go this week. It was actually a pleasure, chaps, to put all the information together for the preview. You feel reinvigorated for the 2022 golf year. Well, that's where I'm at. What about you two?
No, I think you're right. I think it helps to have some time away to kind of recharge the batteries, to resharpen your tools ahead of the next season, yes. which hopefully we've done. I know you alluded to it a minute ago, but we didn't just sit on the couch for 5 weeks. We have been digging away at some data and trying to find some new ways to get some strong results out of 2022. And there's that old adage, isn't there? If you always do what you've always done, then you always get what you always got, I think is the way it was always said to me. And I think if you carry on using the same approach and dodging winners like we were last year, then you're probably going to carry on doing the same thing. So we've kind of taken a different stab at it, haven't we? And we've I don't know how we'll bring this to fruition, I guess, over the next few weeks and months on the site, but we're working more heavily with categorising strokes gained by different types and the different types of courses and green surfaces and lengths of course and all sorts of different angles of attack that we tend to use in the predictor, but bringing that to life a little bit more from a strokes gained perspective. So watch this space. I don't think from what we've eyeballed so far, Steve, I don't think we're in a position to kind of push it out to the masses, but certainly something that we can start to use and see if we can get some leverage out in the background and release it when the time is right, as it were.
All of the hard work is done, isn't it? I categorised the last 5 years of PGA Tour events going back to the start of 2017, looking at length of courses. And that has actually gone live on the predictor model, hasn't it? So we're now going to have a predictor variable for short course, medium length course, and long course. And if people say, oh, you know, what yardages are they? It all depends on what the par was for that particular golf tournament as well. But already, just from that very easy, although time-consuming piece of work, you can start to see patterns with particular players. You know, it's obvious. I mean, I had a view potentially that Kevin Na could be a decent bet this week because he won the Shark Shootout a few weeks ago at the start of December with Jason Kokrag. We know that he's the Sony Open winner down the road at Wailea. That's being played next week. He'll be defending the title there. So clearly there's history there in Hawaii. But then you look at this data and it says, you know, last 5 years. Now, his performances on long golf courses are non-existent. And he hasn't even had a top 10 on a par 72 golf course. So you're going to Kapalua at 7,600 yards, par 73. I'm interested in him. But you just look at that data and you go, I just can't do it. It just doesn't follow whatsoever. So, you know, it's that kind of view, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And Kevin Na example is great because that kind of backs up the kind of the narrative that we've talked about in the past with Na, in that he focuses on the events that are the most suitable for him. The short par 70s seem to be the order of the day with Kevin. And, of course, when you back that up with some stats and the kind of enhanced view that you've pulled together for those courses, then that brings that to life a little bit more. And I think, ultimately, that will help shape, maybe not so much who you include, but who you exclude from your thought processes. So, yeah, hopefully, again, we're just in a, as I say, sharpened tools situation where we're slightly stronger starting position for 2022, and see if we can nail some big winners. See if we can nail that big transatlantic double and pay off my mortgage, Steve, and fulfil one of my New Year's resolutions as a result.
We also, in terms of that. To be fair, of course, that'd be very nice for you. I'd be interested to see if you could actually get the money out once you have the win. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. Yeah. Another thing that we've been working on the data side. So let's bring this to fruition in terms of what the punters and what the visitors at Golf Betting System are going to be getting. Every tournament now on the PGA Tour where strokes gained data is recorded, each week now for every tournament, we will have a strokes gained analysis for that particular tournament with all of the field in that analysis. So that's something that will be available every Monday moving forward. So that was basically an aggregated view of every player in the field and how they have done on a strokes gained basis across all of their skill sets as well, off the tee, approach, ball striking, around the green and putting and total. So that's all going to be available free of charge at Golf Bex. It's from the homepage. I'll also link to it from the preview. As I said, we've added short, medium and long variables to the predictor model. We also added towards the end of last year all strokes gain data in there as well. So stroke, this is on the PGA Tour version. So strokes gained across, it's a rolling 6 month look, isn't it, Paul, on that?
It is, yes, that's right. Yeah, across both tours as well. So
you've added it on the DP World Tour.
Yeah, it's on the DP World Tour. And yeah, to expand on your point, the strokes gained analysis, where it's available on the DP World Tour, will also be published. Excellent. For history for that particular event as well. So Abu Dhabi, which is the first event in a week, well, just over a week's time, will be the first one where we've got some strokes gained history, or enough strokes gained history on the DP World Tour to publish. So yeah, it feels like we're moving it all forward a little bit. The other point that's been pushed out this last few weeks, if you go back and look historically at the results for, or the stats pages for 2021, every stats page now has the final result, the final finishing position for each player appended to it. So if you, and this is the way I tend to start my week, I tend to go back and have a look at the previous year and previous years where possible, and see where the winners came from, what kind of incoming form they had, what kind of course form they had, what kind of odds were they? You know, the kind of questions you need to ask yourself right at the very outset. And now, with the results being appended to 2021, you can go back and physically sort by that results column and see what the top five, top seven, top eight, whatever, top 10 potentially, if you're getting 10 places each way, what they look like in terms of their composition. And, you know, were they good incoming form? Were they good course form? Were they all outsiders? Were they all favourites? Et cetera, et cetera. Particularly useful, I think, for first round leader bets as well, because you can also sort by the tee time as well. So you can see exactly when the players who finished top or in the top five or whatever after the first day, where they came from in terms of their tee times and incoming first round leader form. So that's all available via the stats section, and with a little explanation on there as to how it works. So yeah, do check it out. Come and have a look. Feedback always welcome on any of the stats or the kind of angles of thought processes that we've put together.
We've had some programmers. It took them a while, wasn't it? But we had some programmers who took a lot of their time up getting all of the data rankable or sortable by all devices. So it brings all of our stat pages fully to life now, doesn't it? You can just rank by whatever stat you want to actually look at. Be that tee time on first round leader, average score on a golf course, form by week on the strokes gain stats. You can now, you can actually sort by, you know, who's the best driver at Kapalua over the last, since 2017. I'll give you the answer right now. That's Bryson DeChambeau, surprisingly. Xander Schauffele second, Tony Finau third. But all this data is now readily available for you guys, free of charge, at Golf Betting System on any device, mobile, tablet, and on the old laptop. So come and use it. That's all we'll say. Barry, let's bring you in. What have you gone? Have you had a complete detox from golf over the... I'm talking about betting rather than playing, but have you had a detox from golf since we last spoke?
Yeah, much needed. I was getting very burnt out at the end of end of November. Actually, probably end of October by the time I was really starting to feel it. November was a bit of a slog. It was just unrelenting. I mean, I guess it was the combined super season. It didn't seem to have much of a break across last Christmas and the Christmas before. I think that was possibly because the Masters was in November and kind of everything felt
late November as well.
Yeah, so that kind of, in a way, elongated the season or made it feel like it didn't have a natural shutdown period at that time of year like you usually feel. And so I guess it was just a build-up of everything, and I was just done with it. I don't know if that came across on the pods, or it certainly came across in the success of my bet, but I'd kind of realized I was getting a bit fatigued with it, so I kind of dialed back the bets I was putting, because I knew I just wasn't really kind of feeling it or even thinking about it properly. So fully kind of fresh from the break. I think you need a break to kind of remind you that you really enjoy doing it, and... kind of gives a system just a bit of a time to just take a break. I think we all probably needed a little bit of a time out from it. Sure, build and it helps. It lets the fire kind of build again and the enthusiasm. So I'm ready to go. Not super it was a bank holiday here, and I was indulging or enjoying the last day of the Christmas holiday. So I'm not fully researched up for this, but I have a couple of ideas, and we'll just wing it. Like, you know,
you were enjoying Manchester United losing at home yet again, weren't you? I think a little bit too much.
I don't take pleasure in the losses of others.
I'm sure you don't. Let's talk about this tournament then, shall we? The Century Tournament of Champions. Always one of my favourites. I don't know why. I quite like the golf course. It's just, it's totally unique, isn't it? They play this. It's a winners only event. No cut. So this year we've got a field of 39. The only player that won last year and decided not to attend is Rory, who will open his campaign, as he does quite often, doesn't he, down at Abu Dhabi. He'll be the 4-1 favourite and won't win. Yep. He'll finish second, as per every year. He's starting in Abu Dhabi on the DP World Tour week after next. We've got the Sony Open next week, again, which is on its own. No DP World Tour action. But yeah, it's a beast of a golf course in terms of its length. It's 7,600 yards. It's a par 73, which again makes it totally unique. So how is that par 73 made up? Well, it's actually made up of 11 par 4s, 4 par 3s, sorry, 4 par 5s, and just 3 par 3s. So it's a very unique format. It's a 36-37 split. And what you tend to get here are quite a few course specialists. Now, and you know, I could say to you guys, name a couple of course specialists at Kapalua. And I'm sure you'd probably say, well, in fact, I'll ask you the question. Name me a couple of course specialists at Kapalua.
Well, JT, fairly clear, isn't he? He seems to love the place. Actually, it's funny because if you look down the list of players that have done well, they don't necessarily conform to exactly the same.
They don't
typecast, do they? There's different ways and different means. Patrick Reed's got a great record there as well. And Patrick Reed, Justin Thomas, not exactly two peas in a pod, are they?
No, you've had Zach Johnson win here and Steve Stricker.
Yeah,
it seems to be, and I mean, even last year Harris English.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, Harris English wasn't prestigious tee to green, but he just putted the lights out.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah. I mean, you got the likes of Jordan Spieth. Spieth get to 30 under, didn't he, when he won?
Yeah.
5-6 years ago. And, you know, you've got those fantastic putters who've performed, but then, you've got a mix of ball strikers in there as well. I think there's different ways to skin this particular cat, as it were.
Absolutely.
It's almost like an expansive course design gives different skill sets an opportunity to compete on the same week. It's a very strange concept on the PGA Tour that like you can actually have different skill sets all having a reasonably good chance of competing on the same course. But this one seems to offer it up. You know, it sounds long, but it doesn't really play that way. They all talk about hitting a lot of wedges. So, it's almost like a don't get yourself in trouble, or just don't shoot yourself in the foot, and then you just give yourself chances. And whoever's got the hot hand for the week, I guess, then from there. But it's kind of cool like that.
We all remember the par 5 closing hole, don't we? 677 yard par 5, which plays downhill. Yeah. That right to left downhill shot.
Yeah.
But when you actually go into the detail of this golf course, we've got eight of the 11 par fours are sub 425 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you just said about wedge play. You're going to have wedge in the hands a lot of times here. And the other thing is that you've also got a number of those par fives, I'd say three, which are pretty much drivable. So it's a real mishmash of a golf course. It really is. Getting back into some more of the details. Par 73, 7,596 yards. None of the holes have water hazard, so it's perfect for T2 Tony Finau. The greens are 8,722 square feet on average. So that is huge. They are Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass. They quote the stimp as between 10 and 10 and a half, but we've seen years when they're even sub that, so potentially 9.5 to 10. And the other thing about this golf course is the fairways are like Heathrow or JFK wide runways. They're 65 yards wide at 300 yards carry.
I think you might be able to hit one of those, Steve.
Well, that's if I could get it to the fairway. I'd probably still be on the tee
combination. Oh, yeah, in two, I mean, yeah.
I'll just to put that into any kind of context, we played last time on the PGA Tour the Seaside course for the RSM. Those fairways at 300 yards carry were 34 yards wide. So yeah. They're almost double the width, which, for players who are crooked off the tee, is an advantage for them because they'll be finding themselves on the short stuff far more than they regularly do. That's just fact. I think they're the easiest fairways to hit on the PGA Tour, amazingly enough. Last year, there was a renovation here. All I will say about the renovation is the renovation actually played for the first time in 2020. So this is the third renewal that they played this renovated golf course. The main work that they did was lengthen the course, but they also softened a lot of the contours on the greens. So they've made the putting areas easier. And that came through last year, where we had Harris English winning at what I see more as a traditional century tournament of champions winning score of 25 under. As you said, Paul, 30 under was the best back in 2016 by Jordan Spieth. And that's what prompted them to actually renovate the golf course. The only defence for this golf course is wind. And the fact of the matter is, this week, I'll tell you what, before I say this, I'm just going to double check. I'm going to Windfinder, which is the website I always use for the wind forecasts. Maui, Honolulu Bay, let's have a quick gander. Nothing more than 8 miles an hour across the 4 days. So exactly as it was yesterday. So there is no significant wind. I think, you know, chaps, that 30 under is potentially in danger.
It takes some going to get there, but on a track like that, that is so wide and so scoreable when it's placid. And the greens have softened up a bit as well, haven't they?
Well, this is it. The greens that first year, 2020, was 14 under was the winning total. JT. It was blowing a hoolie, like 30 to 35 every day. And those greens were really, really fast and unreceptive.
Yeah.
Last year, they'd calmed down a lot, as they always do on these golf courses. So you've got another year now with those greens. And they had almost 300 millimetres of rain here in December. I'm just looking at the ruler in front of me. That's a lot of rain. So I think it's going to be a little bit softer. I don't think you're going to get as much rollout on some of these holes in terms of the fairways. This place is known for prestigious runout. You remember that shot with Dustin Johnson whacked it on the green on one of the par fours down the hill?
I just think
the ball's going to be holding up slightly more. There's no wind and the greens are going to be soft. I mean, it's just lights out golf.
They should have a few more available pin positions if the course is that little bit softer and with the renovation of the greens and they're not, you know, combined with the fact they don't always have them running lightning fast. So that's an interesting kind of, you know, viewpoint, I guess, just to, you know, in terms of looking at the course and seeing pin positions that weren't there before. But all factors are pointing to a very easy examination for the guys for the first tournament of the year.
It's the kind of tournament you love, Barry. 30 under par wins. Clearly, I said that with a great big smile on my face because I know you absolutely hate it. 9 players shot 20 under or better last year. And it was the easiest course on the tour. And we're saying that actually this year is going to be even easier in terms of scoring conditions.
But if they just call it a par 68, then we're in business. We've got an interesting...
It shouts Bryson DeChambeau Augusta, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, exactly. Well, look, it's... I mean, it's... It is what it is, and if every week was a tough week and a difficult examination, then they wouldn't be interesting because you don't have variety. So I'm quite happy to watch a birdie fest for the opening tournament of the year. Let's go.
Yeah, and I think the Sony next week kind of tempers it a little bit because we go from a wide open course to a much tighter setup, don't we? So don't have long to wait for something that's a little bit different, even though it's in the same part of the world. So bring it on.
You just look at the players that were 20 under or better last year: Morikawa, Rahm, DeChambeau, Sung Jae-im, Xander, Ryan Palmer, who actually went out in the final group at 100-1 last year. Justin Thomas, Harris English, and Wacky Neiman, who those two made the playoff. And we've said Zach Johnson, Patrick Reed, Steve Stricker, Jonathan Bird, the list goes on, Jeff Ogilvie. There's different kinds of players, different lengths. You know, it's one of those courses where the best player on the week will win. In terms of strokes gained information for you guys that are listening, of course, all of this is available at Golf Betting System as part of my detailed preview. I dread to think how many words it was this particular year. There's more detail there than you can shake a stick at, it has to be said. Strokes gained off the tee. What I'm doing here, I'm going back to 2016 Jordan Spieth and just averaging through of the winners, where they ranked across different skill sets. Strokes gained off the tee, 5th. Strokes gained on approach, 6th. Strokes gained around the green, 9th. Strokes gained tee to green, 4th. Strokes gained putting, 5th. It doesn't really tell you a lot. What it does tell me is I think you've got to be a strong driver here. And that's not necessarily DeChambeau. It can be more Morikawa, who is just literally hitting every fairway and hitting it 295. So I think moderate to long is an advantage, but I don't think you've got to be an outright bomber here. But I do think, and it comes through on the stats, that, I mean, strokes gained off the tee, 5th, or a 5th across those 6 years is the average for the winner here in the field. And that put me off quite a few players. We'll go down that route in a minute. That put me off a few players that I was quite interested in. Because I think here, straight hitting, if not long hitting, I think is a pre-requirement of winning here. There are exceptions, Patrick Reed. But even, we've been discussing Patrick Reed over a period of time. You actually look at Reed now, he's far straighter than he used to be. He's actually taken what looks like 3 to 5 yards off his average length, but actually hitting far more fairways. That seems to be the rationale with Reed.
Yeah, he goes in fits and starts, Reed, doesn't he? He goes in periods where he's nice and straight, hitting lots of greens, can't putt, and then times when it goes completely the other way. He can't hit a fairway, and he's like Houdini around the greens. And when he marries those two together in those odd weeks, that's when you get your winner.
When I look at the traditional skill sets, and this goes back to Jeff Ogilvie 2010, greens in reg, driving distance 13th in the field, accuracy 17th, greens in reg 8th, proximity to hole 10, that's quite high, scrambling 9th, putting average 3rd. So really, it's not rocket science. You've got to create plenty of eagle and birdie chances, and whoever is converting the most eventually gets the job done. That's kind of where we're at, isn't it? And as we, I've already alluded to, I mean, last year was a bit of an abnormality with Harris English. He was weaker from tee to green, 13th than usual, but his putting, strokes gained, was first in the field. Year before that, Justin Thomas, strokes gained, tee to green, was second, and he was 13th for strokes gained putting, so it's all much of a muchness, really. So we're expecting an absolute birdie eagle fest this week. Average price of winners here, something we always look at. If we go back to 2010, Jeff Ogilvie won this at 9-1. You average through the winning price here, 18.18-1. The highest price winner has been 50-1, and that was Jonathan Bird way back in 2011. Harris English last year won at 33-1, which was the second highest price since 2010. If you actually look at the past 8 renewals, so since they've gone into this split PGA Tour season, The average is 21-1. Jordan Spieth was the shortest winning price here, 5-1 in 2016. Now that takes us to this week's betting board. John Rahm is the favourite. I am seeing... Well, it kind of varies. John Rahm is the favourite in most places. I'm seeing him now. He's just been lengthened to 9-1 with Bet365. Justin Thomas is second favourite, but he's more 8-1. So, I don't know. Let's call them joint favourites. Rahm and Thomas, 8-1. We then got Colin Morikawa at 10s. Bryson DeChambeau at 12s. I have no idea why Bryson DeChambeau is 12-1, but he is. This is a guy that's been trying to hit the ball to Mars and back for the last 3 months and not played any competitive golf. Victor Hovland is generally 11-12-1, but I'm seeing him at 14-1 in a couple of spots. Patrick Cantlay is a 14-1 chance. Xander is 12-1 out to 14s in a couple of spots. And then we're out to the likes of Sam Burns at 18-1. Jordan Spieth at 22s, the same price as Daniel Berger. And then Matsuyama at 25-1. Cam Smith and Patrick Reed at 28-1. With Sungjae Im. So that's where we're at. It's a good field. What are your thoughts around this event, chaps?
Yeah, I personally tend to back a 2 or 3 in this, and that kind of is my lot. It's kind of a watching brief the first week back, because you get those players who've wintered well and have kept their eye on with some practice, and those that haven't, you're second guessing that to a certain degree. I think you can look back historically and see those players that have started seasons well and those that haven't. But situations change. You know, these guys' lives change, don't they? You know, they get married, they have babies, they have Christmases that are more extensive than they were when they were younger, freer, single guys. You know, there's differences that impact how prepared some of these players are and will be. And I like the event. I don't like the fact it's on so late at night, but we can't do much about the time zones. It's one that I tend to have a little dabble in without going too deep, personally. Don't know about what about you, Barry? Did you like to get involved in this one?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that, Paul. Yeah, it's the timing of the viewing. It kicks off. Comes onto TV at 10:30, and you're almost kind of mentally switched off for the day, and then you see it pop on, and you go, oh God, you're golf. Okay, a few hours to watch. It's one that you just kind of dip the toe in, I suppose, would be as the start of the year event. I never get to see it as much as you'd like to, but at the same time, it's not a bad way to start out. Just a little, get up to jogging pace. So, I kind of enjoy it, and I never go mad at the bets, but you know, it's interesting this year. There's like, it's a whatever 39 man fields are paying 6 places. There's a couple of prices out there that you'd see for the guys in a full field event, and you're kind of thinking, okay, I can get on board with this. So, it's kind of sucking me into a couple of bets.
That's a very good point, Barry. Congratulations to Boyle Sports, Betfred, Ladbrokes and Coral, Betfair Sportsbook, Paddy Power and William Hill. They've all gone 6 places each way at 50 odds this week, which in a 39-man field is good value. I can remember going way back where 4 places was the industry standard for this. And, you know, it used to get the odd player going 5 and a 5th. So, yeah. It just shows you how competitive it's getting in terms of the each-way places. One point I've made here in my preview, and this has always driven my selections here, 12 of the last 13 winners have all played competitive golf in December prior. Be that in Australia, pre-COVID times, or at Tigers Hero World Challenge, and or the QBE shootout. And that was exactly the case last year for Harris English, who came in off form, I believe, of sixth at the RSM Classic, fifth at the Mayakoba. He then won the QBE shootout in a team with Matt Kuchar at Greg Norman's event in Florida in mid-December. Came here, won at 33-1. The only player of those 13, the 13 winners that didn't come in with play in December was Jonathan Bird. And he won the Shriners Open in Las Vegas, which I think back then it probably would have been in early November. Came straight here and won at 50-1. So if you're going down the route of saying that someone needs to have played in December to win here, that instantly takes John Rahm out of the equation. And you know what? John Rahm is going to be my fade of the week. We're back to fade of the week, chaps. I'm not going anywhere near John Rahm this week. Which means he'll do what he usually does, finish his second or third. But that doesn't mean we're looking for winners here. I don't like John Rahm on the basis that we haven't seen him since the start of October. And he was very, 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 very underwhelming when he played in Spain those two events.
He was. His last three. What's he got? Miscut. I'm trying to do it from memory. Miscut 17th or something like that, was it? And then miscut over his last three. It's, as you say, underwhelming is probably the right word. Just not firing on all cylinders at the moment. And but again, you could hit the ground running, but at that price, it's taken a little bit of a leap of faith, aren't you? He's also got the world number one to try and protect this week as well, hasn't he? So maybe that added motivation to hit the ground running. But I can let him go at that price, personally.
JT played the World Challenge at the Hero, and he played the Father and Son in December. Colin Morikawa played the World Challenge, of course. DeChambeau played the World Challenge. Victor Hovland won the Hero World Challenge. We then go to Patrick Cantlay, who we haven't seen since the Tour Championship, and he won how many trillion dollars did he win over that tour? The BMW, the Tour Championship, and won the FedEx Cup. I think Patrick's been having a good time. Xander played the Hero, as did Sam Burns. Sam Burns also played the Shark Shootout, as I know it, the QBE Shootout. So he played both. Spieth played abysmally at the Hero, but hadn't played anything before then, like DeChambeau. And then you're out to the likes of Berger, who played the Hero. Matsuyama, we haven't seen him since he won in his homeland out in Japan. So what I'm suggesting here is, if you're going to go down this route of following this trend, there are a number of high-name players you can just cross straight off the list. And I actually toyed with Matsuyama this week. Because you look at his course form here, it is pretty, pretty stellar, it has to be said. He does like the place. But it goes against so many of my kind of preordained views of Hideki Matsuyama, this actual golf course. Well, just the fact that it's Bermuda grass for a start. But you actually look at what Matsuyama's done here. I think he's had 2 seconds and a third place in his four. Here you go, yeah. Third, second, fourth, and then last year he was 41st. So I did toy with Matsuyama. If you're going to go down this, the view of, these trends are rubbish, which they often, as we know, they do get broken. The other one I did like at that kind of price point who I haven't backed is Sung Jae-in. Because Sung Jae-in, he won the Shriners. I think he top 10 then at the CJ Cup in Las Vegas. And he was top 20 at Houston. And I was seeing some 28-1 about him yesterday morning, which I thought was a reasonable price, especially for a guy who on course debut last year finished in the top five at 40-1. Another point here, no course debutant has won this, going all the way back to one of your old mates, Paul, Daniel Chopra in 2007. So I think this isn't for an each way payout, because you tend to get at least one player that gets in the each way places that's on a course debut. But to actually get the winner, we haven't seen a course debutant winner since 2007. And again, that takes quite a few of some very informed players out of the mix in terms of Sam Burns, for example, Taylor Gooch, Seamus Power's been in decent nick. I'm not suggesting you don't back them as an each-way punt, but to win hasn't happened of late. Cam Davis, Eric Van Rooyen, Garrick Higo, Joel Damon, KH Lee, Lucas Herbert, and Burns, Power and Gooch, they are the debutants on this course. The other thing I found amusing was the fact that this is Phil Mickelson's first Tournament of Champions appearance since 2001.
Yep, he normally doesn't bother, does he?
He doesn't. So Phil is in attendance this week.
Didn't he tweet out, I wonder if that's true or not, that he has to play this in order to qualify for the PIP?
That's what
I saw. The Player Impact Fund, you know, the 40 million wheelbarrow of cash they're all tweeting about all year long.
Oh, okay.
There you go. I didn't know that was contingent on him playing, but that would kind of make a level of sense, wouldn't it? I think they have a bit of banter with all of this as well, don't they? But it's a big.
It's become big character. It's a bit of a joke. Like it's. Anyway, look, it's that means there are what 10 or 11 guys out of the 39 that haven't, if you're trying to narrow down the field to identify a winner, 10 or 11 there are course debutants. And so you're down to less, only
29. I've got nine players on course debut. So we're down to 30 straight away. As I said, I would not be surprised if Sam Burns, who seems to be playing golf from the stars, continues that and gets a nice top five, top six each way payout. But going back to that trend, he doesn't win it. And there is a lot to like about Sam Burns. You know, this boy, he hits it long. He hits it relatively straight. He's high GIR. And he just shoots light out on Bermuda grass greens. I mean, Burns was another one. You look at him in your research and you go, good God, Burns is pretty much tailor-made for this golf course. But he was chalked up at 18-1, which is he's actually a short price than the Masters winner, Hideki Matsuyama, who's coming off a win. He's priced accordingly, isn't he?
Yeah, there's a lot of respect being shown for Sam Burns, and that was evident in the back end of last year as well. And that is quite right, because his incoming form is outstanding, was he? Top seven in four of his last five starts, or regular starts at least.
Yeah, so he's a pain in the ass, and the bookies don't want him backed too heavily, because the chances of him getting an each-way payout are pretty high the way he's playing golf. So
This is Burns' form. You listen to this, gents. Second at the Shark Shootout. Third at the World Challenge, when he was playing with some of the best players in the world, of course. Seventh in Houston. Fifth at the CJ Cup, and he won the Sanderson Farms. Yeah. It's not bad, is it?
It's not too shabby.
It's not too shabby, is it? Not too shabby at all. Right. I'll tell you where I'm at on this. Let's actually give the guy some views. I've done my failure of the week. That is John Rahm. So shoot me down on that. I haven't seen the DK points. Is he top of the lot this week on DK? Paul, do you know? Am I stitching you up here with a question you don't know the answer to? You have a look into it. I'd be surprised if Rahm wasn't the most expensive.
Yeah, well, you do tend to get a little bit of a variance between the odds and the DK.
They might have JT at number one.
No. Rahm, 11,000. Morikawa, 10,800. JT, 10,600. So, it's very similar to the betting. Just with Morikawa and Thomas flipped effectively.
I came into this with a toss-up of who to back. The two that I had in mind at the very top of the market was going to be Victor or Colin. That was preordained. I've been thinking about that over the festive period. So when I saw that Colin was actually separated by a couple of points from JT and John Rahm, I was very, very upbeat about that. I backed Colin Morikawa. I managed to get him at 11-1 with Spreadex. Spreadex Sportsbook. For those of you who don't know Spreadex, UK-based. Their history is in spread betting, but I think they've done, is it like since 2007, Paul, they've done a sports book as well?
Yeah. They've been running alongside it for a while.
They're relatively near us, aren't they? They're based over in St Albans in Hertfordshire. I've got five places each way, a 50 odds with Spreadex at 11-1 on Colin Morikawa. There are a couple of firms in the UK, firms that I haven't got an account with, who were actually adding him up at 12-1 first thing yesterday morning. And I know that 12-1... Briefly. I know that 12-1 was hanging on over in the States at DraftKings Sportsbook. Whether that's gone or I don't know. But anyway, I've got him at 11-1. I'm on the Morikawa boat this week. I think there's so many good things about this guy. If you're pricing Morikawa up behind John Rahm that hasn't played since October and since J2, I still don't think, with his driving problems and the fact that his putting is... You go back to JT in 2017, I tipped him up to win this at 22-1 and he did. He was such an awesome putter back then. He was one of the best putters on the planet. Mm. That putter now is so bulky. It can be good and it can be absolutely tremendously bad. And I'm just looking at his numbers here from last year. Despite this, he was last in the field for fairways hit. And that, I think, is still JT's problem. And I keep saying that until it actually stops. He hits a couple of these destructive drives every tournament. And, you know, doubles and trebles are on the table on occasion. And especially in an event here where you've got to be shooting 28 and 30 under, I think there's going to be some potentially problems for JT where he actually... I can see JT going very, very well and then all of a sudden double bogey because he's had one of these out-of-bounders or something crazy's happened with the driver.
Or you've got to keep going with the putter, haven't you? You can't afford to have that slack round with the putter either. Otherwise, you're just not going to keep up with the pace. And as you said, you never can quite tell with this putter if it's going to be where it should be or not.
So I think Colin Morikawa, at the World Challenge, Steve, he was five shots ahead in the final round and he absolutely shat his pants because of the world number one. Well, yeah, the thing with Morikawa, I think he's a, you know, it's fairly self-evident. This guy is a fast learner, mate. This is a guy that's, you know, he's won two majors already and the guy's just 24 years of age. He's a DP World Tour Race to Dubai winner at just 24 years of age. I think coming here with John Rahm, here the world number one, playing a golf course he clearly likes, you know, 2 7th places in his two appearances, I actually think that'll be a spur to him. So I don't see the world number one situation being a problem. The other thing, going back to that hero, was he'd never had a five-shot lead or a considerable lead going into the final round. I think he'd led one tournament by a shot. So again, he's 24, he's learning all this stuff. He'd never been there where everyone's gone, well, he's won the tournament, actually starting the final round.
Yeah.
And I saw some crazy stat, like, was it Justin Rahl? Someone said out there the other day that only 21 or 22% of Sunday leaders actually converted last season. It was something crazily small.
Opposing the 54-hole leader, particularly last year, would have been really quite fruitful. The other point with Morikawa is you had this world number one scenario right in front of him, something he was trying to grapple with during that event. Right up until to the final day. And yes, he's got the same scenario this week, although the scenarios are far more straightforward, aren't they? There's far more scope for him to reach number one. With the way that the points are structured and the way that the points are dropping off of John Rahm's history right now. But that may have been his, you know, kind of his trial run for it, you know, get his head around it, go back and recoup and and see where it takes him. Of the top of the market, I would have probably, not that I have backed him, but that would have kind of been the angle that I'd have gone for. And JT, for all of his quality record here, I can't trust his putting. I can't trust him to keep going at that kind of pace to hit that, as you said, somewhere in the region of 25 under or deeper this week.
I keep eight-week trackers. If you're new to the podcast or new to Golf Betting System, I keep eight-week trackers, and we track strokes gained across both the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour, and we merge them into one. I'm not sure anyone else does that. Colin Morikawa, over the past 8 weeks, and yes, there's a couple of gaps in there where they played stuff at Myoko, but anyway, he is ranking in my eight-week tracker number one for strokes gained total, number two for strokes gained tee to green, and get this, for a guy that's not the best putter in the world, traditionally, he's ranking second for strokes gained putting. And then, you talked earlier, Paul, about us sharpening our tools. We've got this behind, we've got a strokes gained total summary access now, where we've gone back, Paul's gone back, and we've all strokes gained across a multitude of different functions and designers, course length. We've also got it for Bermuda grass. So all Bermuda grass PGA Tour events going back to 2017. And this is strokes gained total. Colin Morikawa in this field ranks third, behind only Justin Thomas and Bryson DeChambeau. So looking at those strokes gained total stats, it also suggests that behind Bent Poa mix, this is Morikawa's best performance kind of for green. I'm not suggesting he's the best Bermuda grass putter in the field, but when it comes to results, strokes gained total, he's third best. His second best surface behind Bent Poa is Bermuda. So I'm in on 11-1 on Colin Morikawa at the top of the market. I went 4 points each way. Where do you rank, when you look at these guys, where would you rank a Hovland in comparison these days to a Morikawa or a JT? Because I've been, you know, listening to a lot of podcasts and stuff about Hovland. I know that Hovland is absolutely red hot with people's projections over in North America about he's going to win his first major. If they're people that have been doing drafts, he's been picked first, second draft pick for the whole of the PGA Tour and the major season in terms of the points that he can bring in and the money he can bring in and all these fantasy games. What kind of a year do you think Hovland's going to have? Is it going to be that breakout year where he wins two, three, four tournaments or potentially a major in there as well?
I don't know. He's won his last two anyway, hasn't he? It's a huge talent, and it will be fascinating to see how he goes. I'm not sure I put him on exactly the same level as a Colin Morikawa right now.
No.
But he's a young lad, and if you ask me this question in 12 months' time, it could be a completely different answer. He may have nailed that first major. He may have won three or four more events over the course of the calendar year and be pushing right up towards the very, very top of those world rankings. He seems to have the game to be able to push that much further. It'll be fascinating to see how he progresses. But right now, he's not on an identical level to a Colin Morikawa. Justin Thomas, his game kind of fluctuates between bits being really good and bits being really bad. And should he find that level of consistency across all aspects again, then there's another player who could be pushing right at the very top.
Do you think Justin Thomas is like a Rory McIlroy light?
Yeah.
Just sometimes parts of the game just go off the boil, but he can still just pull together the results, backdoor results.
It's mad, mate. For a guy that's slagged off so badly as Rory, when you this whole piece of work Paul and I have been doing for the last 5 weeks, strokes gained total and strokes gained across all of the tournaments last 5 years, Rory is just all over it, isn't he, Paul? Wherever you look, he's near the top or at the top of every function, every variable, every angle, every designer. He's that consistent. And then we go, oh, he does. But he doesn't win as much as he used to. That's facts. And JT's kind of gone that way, hasn't he? Very, very consistent. Very rare that JT doesn't finish a tournament in the top 10. But he had one win last year.
And he's really
and he was good. Far more he was far more prestigious than that, wasn't he? He used to have years where he'd get 2 wins, 3 wins, 4 wins, and all of a sudden that's kind of leaned off. And that's because he's having trouble with the putter and he's having trouble with the driver. Still, his approach is Morikawa-esque, isn't it? It's top three in the world, his approach play, Thomas. It's the driver and it's the putter.
And do you know what? I think you're going to get like anomalies like that or variances in their like results over a year or 2 years.
But you don't get the variance in his odds though, do you? That's the trouble.
No, and that's the problem. But the thing is, they keep the thing that's remained reasonably constant for the two of them is that they're generally putting themselves in positions to win tournaments, and the variance is whether they convert them or not in any given stretch of time. And that's why you maybe get these like 2 and 3 win years versus a more dry period. It's interesting, but I mean, I suppose from their point of view, like if they're always in with a chance, then they're in with a chance of winning. Whereas if they completely bomb out each week and you miss the cut, you can't win the tournament. But if they're there, thereabouts and hanging around, you know, there's a chance they can just get a hot streak on a Sunday, blitz a load of birdies and grab a win. And I think it's something that you might see JT or Rory just go on a multi-win year this season. I'd be kind of shocked if one of them doesn't, or both of them.
Yeah.
And the thing about JT's putting is that, you know, you don't lose the ability, you don't lose the fact that you were a great putter. You might lose your form with it, but if you were a great putter, you can get that back. It might just take one little spark, one little thing, and he could always, you know, that JT deadly, like lethal sniper putter that he was could be back.
Everything I see, read, and I love JT, you know me, he's probably in my top three favourite players. I love Justin Thomas. I think he's a great bloke. I want him to do well. But in a way, everything I hear and read about him, it's the hardest I've ever worked. You know, the work that I'm putting in, I'm not having down. It's almost as if he's trying too hard. It's got to that stage. But we'll see. You know, he might come out flying. Who knows? He's such a talented guy. I'll go through my other two tips and we'll quickly move on to you guys. We're approaching the hour mark. I've gone Patrick Reed, 1.5 points each way at 28-1. I managed to snare that with Ladbrokes, 6 places each way. Reed, we said, horse recourse, undoubtedly. Career-wise, 4 of his 9 PGA Tour victories have been on Bermuda grass greens, and 3 of those 9 wins have been by the coast. Here in Kapalua, 2015, Liberty National, 2019, opposite Manhattan, and Torrey Pines last year, 2021. So he likes to play by the coast. I genuinely think that Reed's going to have a big year. I genuinely think that what happened last year with him basically being snubbed by his fellow peers for the Ryder Cup will get Captain America absolutely brimming to try and get himself an automatic spot for the President's Cup this year. And I think he's going to have a good year, Patrick Reed. I think he's going to come out firing. And on this golf course, I just really fancy his chances, especially as he was third last time out at the Hero World Challenge, which was by far his best performance for quite a while. I think he was second in Bermuda Championship, but the Bermuda Championship was kind of, wasn't it? One of those alternate events. This one, the World Challenge, I think he was fourth for scoring across Friday, Saturday and Sunday, and he was fifth for scoring across the weekend. So he was clearly up with the pace, which is, they're good signs there. Good signs coming out of Reed. And actually, if I look at our mega strokes gained number analysis, he ranks 9th since 2017 on long golf courses for strokes gained total. Morikawa actually ranks 7th in that. The number one guy, guess what? Rory McIlroy at 1 and Justin Thomas at 2 for long golf courses since 2017 strokes gained total. I just like Reed this time. He loves playing by the coast. He loves long golf courses. And actually, if if he can find some consistency hitting the greens and with the putter, that kind. Did he? I'm trying to remember what he won that tournament that they used to play. Was it the Bob Hope Lottery? Didn't he win that at 30 under par once or something crazy?
He can get super low, Patrick Reed. When we know what a fantastic scrambler and putter he is, and if you couple that on a course where he's not going to be penalised from off the tee when his driving's not as good as it should be, then he can accumulate that kind of score. And I'm with you, Steve. I think Reed's a cracking bet this week. I really do. I talked about him at length at the back end of last year.
We talked about this when I was catching COVID up in London all those weeks ago, didn't we? Oh, that Patrick Reed, we're about 12 points. Tournament champion, all over that. He was 28 under par when he won the 2014 Humana Challenge.
Yeah. He can get to the right kind of number, I think.
The other one for me, he's completely unfashionable. He's very unpopular. And he's always overpriced. 40-1 I got on Jason Kokrak this week. And that guy is coming off first at Houston Open and first with Kevin Na at the QBE shootout. Putting lights out, hitting plenty of greens. And his first PGA Tour victory, if you remember, going back to Las Vegas, I think it was the CJ Cup. He beat an absolutely stellar field to win his first ever. Broke his PGA Tour maiden. You know, it had everybody in it. Rahm, Morikawa, DJ, McIlroy, Cantlay, Hovland, JT. So if you think that he can't win a tournament with this level of field, well, he's already done it. So I took the 40-1 on Jason Kokrak, who's playing Golf from the Gods. He's up to 20 in the world, Jason Kokrak. Can you believe that? I think everyone believes that he'll just disappear and he'll be 120 by the end of the year because it's just a bit of a fad phase he's going through. But you actually think about it, he's been playing world-class golf now for, 15 months, Kokrak? I don't necessarily see why that ends this week. So I've gone for Kokrak at 40s. Reed at 28 and Colin Morikawa at 11-1. You're on Patrick Reed, Paul. We haven't heard from Barry. Hit us with it, Barry. You've been doing all your research over the last 30 minutes. Who are you going for?
Yeah, condensed cramming for the exam. One question about Kokrak, because it's a really interesting bet. He had one appearance at this before. He was 35th last year. Was there something kind of his incoming form into this last year? Was that a bit dodgy? Does that explain that? Or because 35th says to me not a great course match just on his for a debut result here.
If I categorise Kokrak, he is a medium to long course specialist, and he used to be a fantastic tee to green player that couldn't putt at all. And now all of a sudden he's always in the top. I mean, last year he was in the top 10 for strokes gained putting across the whole year, whole season. And he's in the top 10 already this year. So he's actually a guy that can hit tons of greens and he's putting lights out. Why? Maybe he'd been on too many tequilas or something last year. Who knows? But he's got courses. He's been here. He's ticked that box, hasn't he? He isn't a Daniel Chopra course debutant. He's been here, he's played. And we've had players here that have literally finished last and then won on their second outing. So I'm not really concerned about it.
Yeah, Barry, so he played four.
Go on. I was just going to say, to answer your question, he'd missed his previous two cuts coming into this at the back end of last year. He had won in the full season, at the back end in the autumn season.
You can imagine what happened. He won the CJ Cup, didn't he, in Las Vegas. His first ever PGA Tour victory, and then he just got on it. missed the cut, came here, didn't do very well. But this year, it's completely other reverse. One in Houston, one in Florida at the QBE. He's coming here at peak of confidence. And I just think at 40-1, he was 22-1 with Coral and Ladbrokes this morning. They just lengthened his price to 30s. So you've got that. He was half the price with one bookmaker as opposed to 40-1 at Betfair. I think he's been completely overlooked.
Almost a disrespectful price.
Yeah, you got it. You got it.
So
I'm on Kokrak, yeah.
You've convinced me. I'm adding that. The other two I've got, I've backed Xander because this is a 14-1 for Xander is a Xander full field price almost. So I'm happy to take that on. Guys, yeah.
That's a Xander major price.
yeah, we don't need to say much more. And he's in a very short field, so I'll take him on. There's not often I back Sander because he hits an awful lot of places, but they're not very lucrative places, you know, for his whatever 14-20-1 or 22-1 you can generally find them at week on week. So look, I'll take him on in a short field like this. And then the other one is Sung Jae Im. Missed the early 28s, but took 25s. He's just a machine for his golf, and I can't imagine he was indulging too much in Christmas time and that kind of drop at the end of the year. So I think he'll have been working away a bit, maybe more so than the rest of the guys over Christmas, and might be that bit sharper.
I'd have loved to have seen Sung Jae Im. Not that he could, but I'd have loved to have seen him play something in Korea towards the end of the year and come here.
Maybe he wanted to break. I don't know.
Yeah. If there's one player that in that field, there were a couple, Matsuyama and Im were the two, that if they break that trend of December or the World Challenge, it'd be one of those two, I think.
The December was not a mad one to break, though, is it? Like, you know, it's a difference of 1 or 2 weeks. So,
Im, you think about Im, and I've read this and I agree with this. A couple of courses I think kind of correlate here, although it sounds crazy. I think there's Augusta National tones to this place. Wide fairways, long golf course, contoured greens. I know it's not 14 on the stint, but there's a kind of visual feel to it, kind of bombs away golf. The other one, I think, that links to this is the... Is it not... I forget now. Is it nine bridges over that they play in South Korea?
Nine Oaks.
Yeah. How many bridges? I've forgotten.
Nine, isn't it?
Oh, it was nine bridges, sorry.
Nine bridges, that's it.
Nixon Oaks, yeah.
That is a very... I think the fact that it's on the island, they reckon that Jeju Island is very Hawaiian in its feel. The same kind of foliage and the trees. That's an elevation. It's a relatively wide golf course. And Sung Jae Im is from Jeju Island. And I think he's had a top 10 there. And of course, he finished second at the Masters. Was it end of 2019? Yeah, that'd have been it, wouldn't it? Yeah, 2019 Masters. So yeah, I can see him. I can see a lot of good about him.
It's so look, hey, who knows? If any of us had the solution to golf betting, we actually wouldn't be doing this show, you know. So you wouldn't be sharing the secrets, that's for sure. So I like our picks. I like where we're at. Bring it on.
Yeah. I've got one more. I've backed two actually. Patrick Reed, as I mentioned a second ago. The other one I've backed is Mark Leishman, 35s. There was a bit of early 40s, but 35-1 now. Some good solid all round numbers. Par 72s is good. Resort courses are good. Got a couple of wins on Bermuda. Fourth strokes gained putting on Bermuda in this field as well. We've got a seventh and a fourth here from two decent attempts from four starts here. And he played well at the CBA, didn't he, with Jason Day? I think they were three clear, weren't they, going into the final day before...
Is it CB? I had it down as the QB.
QB, CB.
You've got to get the detail right. The QBE shooter. CBA, but they were leading going into Sunday, weren't they? Jason Day.
Yeah. I'm getting ahead of myself, Steve, for when you get your knighthood. They were three clear. I didn't quite do it with Jake, but yeah, he was playing with Jason Day, who's hardly been setting the world alight over the last.
I think he's had a couple of top fives though, hasn't he, in the full series?
Yeah, he has. Yeah,
so he's playing better, Leishman.
Yeah, he, again, from the putting perspective, I think you're going to need to putt well to get to the number here. He was second for strokes gained putting at both the Fortinet and the Shriners, where he played well, as you say. He's got to 23 under to win the BMW Championship in the past, 26 under to win the CIMB Classic back in 2018. He's won in January before at the Farmers back in 2020. President's Cup's going to be a bit of the narrative this season as well, isn't it? And 13th at the moment in the rankings, so he needs to get a little bit of a wriggle on if he's going to be featuring in that this year. So, lots to like with Leishman. 35s, I thought, was a solid each-way bet. in this short field.
There were three for me at deeper price point: Reed, Coke Rag, and Leishman. So I've left Leishman out. You've got Leishman. So for the podcast, we've got the angles covered.
Excellent.
I like that. That's us then, guys. That's the first podcast of 2022.
Yes. Best of luck, guys. Best of luck for 2022. Let's nail some absolute monster winners this year, shall we?
Absolutely.
Let's just nail loads of winners. They don't need to be monsters. Just loads of winners.
I have got a New Year's resolution, which is the first time I've had one for, well, I think it might be the first time ever. I am going to enjoy my golf betting a lot more, not worry so much, and not be so... I'm just going to go out there, pick who I want, write the preview, get the job done. And by the time I've had four blank weeks by the end of January, that phraseology will be completely and utterly shot to pieces.
Be a broken man.
Yeah, you'll have a new alter ego that'll have a very angry voice.
I just think you find your lane, don't you, and you stick with it. That's what we need to do. And just have a little bit more Sunday luck. That's all we need.
Yeah. We had some awful Sundays last year from some fantastic positions. So.
I heard Jeff Feinberg on a podcast over the festive period, and I agree with him completely in what he said. He said, at the end of the day, all you can do is put players into a position on Sunday to win, and from that point onwards, it's 100% luck. And I don't disagree with that. And that's a guy that got how many winners last year, Jeff Feinberg? Loads of them.
He had a storming year, Jeff, didn't
he? So there you go. He did have a good year. Right. Good luck to you guys for the week. I will speak to you again next week for the Sony Open. And best of luck to the listeners. We'll be back next week for the Sony Open in Hawaii. Enjoy your golf betting this week. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more, 'cause it's the golf betting system, the golf betting system, it's the golf